In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 153. We'll call it the one-third pole. It's not the quarter pole, but it's kind of amazing we're a third away through the baseball season already. So we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about some injuries. We'll talk about what Hal Steinbrenner is talking about, salaries and the payroll in New York. And we'll talk a little bit about this Division III college baseball team that is playing for a school that actually does not exist anymore, which is pretty fascinating. All right, John, we're a third of the way through. The Yankees look, for the most part, great.
Yep.
They're not, you know, they're right there with the Phillies as the most wins in baseball.
I was going to say, if it wasn't for the Phillies, they'd be great.
Yeah, and they, with Aaron Judge, and I will talk about the Red Sox in a second too, but they got everybody. I mean, somebody can slump on that team. That's the thing that's I find fascinating, is that they can have a guy or two slump and still be dominant.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Soto, obviously, addition changes the lineup incredible. And with Volpe hitting the way he's been hitting all season is a whole different beast, too, because, you know, you're talking about DJ LeMahieu coming back very soon, and he won't even be considered for the leadoff spot. So that says volumes for what they think about Volpe and how he's performing. But yeah, great things for the Yankees as far as, you know, as long as they stay healthy, it looks really good. It looks really good going forward. The pitching is lights out. Aaron Judge is basically raised his average 100 points in less than a month, in a month. You know, he was batting under almost 200 at the beginning of the month, and now he's basically leading every statistical category in the AL except for batting average and RBIs, I believe. So great things there. Soto's doing the same thing pretty much over and over. He's not as hot as he was right out the gates, but he's still doing Soto things, hitting two home runs a night here and there. And I mean, he's a great player. We know it. And
so your thing with Steinbrenner, Steinbrenner said what?
Steinbrenner said, hold on, let me get it.
You can paraphrase it too. So.
Well, I can tell you right now, he says, I'm going to be honest. Payrolls at the level we're at right now are simply not sustainable for us financially. We've got a considerable amount of money coming off next season. And he's basically saying with the money coming off next season, they still can't keep a payroll there.
Well, so is Rizzo come off next year?
There's a lot of players that are coming off. Rizzo doesn't come off. Okay. Verdugo will come off. Technically, Soto comes off next season because they're paying him like $32 million. Glaber will come off.
And Soto's going to be a free agent?
Soto's going to be a free agent, obviously, okay, because he signed an arbitration deal with the Yankees, but he's not, he's got to be, you know.
So is he, I guess the thing is this a serious marker warning fans that someone like Soto might not come back?
I don't think so. I think this
so why would he say it?
I think it's more of him crying the fact that if you're going to be a team that is willing to spend the money, and let's be honest, there's plenty of teams out there that have the money to spend, regardless of what the revenue they think is coming in the size of their city. I think that's his way of saying we're almost being penalized because we're the few teams that will go after and spend the money.
Why are they being penalized?
Because you have to pay a competitive balance tax on the money.
That's a free will choice to do.
Exactly. But I think what he's saying is you're going to say you go $300 million payroll, right? And you're going to be paying basically every over $226 million or something like that is going to be taxed. Right. Yeah, so you're going to be paying that money back to all these other teams.
I understand.
And they're not using that money. So I think he's just pissed off that the Mets, the typical teams we always talk about are spending the money and the other teams aren't going to spend it. And I think that's his way of just publicly saying that. The Yankees are going to sign Juan Soto. They're going to have to. If they have $30 million committed to him this year, right, already, what's another $15 to $20 million with the money that's going to come off the books next year?
Wow. So you think he's a $50 million guy?
Well, listen, Yeah, if you listened to the last podcast while you were out gallivanting around ignoring us, you would know that. Anyway, so let's just, like, the Yankees payroll in this year is $302 million, okay? And if they leave everything off the table for next year, it goes down to $181 million.
Yeah, but there's a ton of holes they got to fill with.
Well, that's also not including the arbitration eligible players and all that, and that's including the $32 million you're paying Juan Soto. So if you're going to lose the players, like, okay, Soto's $31 million, Gleyber Torres, $14 million, Verdugo, $8.5 million, Clay Holmes, $6 million. So if I'm looking at this list, I'm thinking the Yankees would want to try to re-sign probably Clay Holmes based on the season he's having right now.
He'd get more money.
Okay. Nestor Cortez is on that list. He's only making $3.9
million. He'll make more money.
I would think Nestor Cortez might be a player the Yankees would be willing to let go because they might be able to fill him internally with some prospects coming up or a cheaper maybe free agent, because if Nestor keeps, even though he's probably the worst pitcher on the Yankees right now, given the fact that the Yankees are playing good, he will get a higher value for what for his return. Then you have guys like Grisham, gone. Jonathan Loaiza, injured, gone. Jose Trevino, big question mark there. Do you bring him back?
But wait, let me just interject here, because I think I get the point. But what I want to say is, and I want to get to the Red Sox and get to some other topics, is I look at the Dodgers. And the Dodgers have spent all that money, and I mean, I'm not even counting the
deferred money.
No, the pandemic title.
Okay.
Because I think even in-house they don't recognize it, right? So they have to win, and they haven't won the last couple of years with that payroll. And my point about the Yankees is, and some people say, well, if they win, then it eases the pressure to spend. I actually think that if the Yankees win, it allows them to keep spending, right? So I feel like it's really important, if you're a Yankee fan, for them to win the World Series this year, because then I think that Steinbrenner won't feel as much pressure and he won't be as mad about the balance of things when he pays that tax. And so I think that if they don't win, then that's face, because, you know, listen, if you win the World Series, between all the stuff you still have to share with revenue, it still means a lot more money for the team.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I think that really, really takes a lot of pressure.
I don't know why they're such a big skunk, because the Yankees are in a good position, because if they're going to go back to basically the same payroll they have now, there's a ton of wiggle room next year, and that's including signing Juan Soto.
But I'd be mad, too, if you know, the Pirates take that $5 million or whatever and then
Oh, 100%, and I think that's what I was getting at.
But it didn't feel like that's what he was saying. To me, I thought he was preparing people for them to not spend.
Well, in the same way, I think it's, you know, shots across the bow kind of thing. You know, it's you know, like we talked about last time, you know, I'm going to bring a contract and hopefully we could sign him in the middle of the season, and everyone freaks out and they're like, oh, you know, the Yankees are going to offer Juan Soto a contract. When Hal Steinbrenner talks, people are going to listen.
Yeah. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Let's talk about the Red Sox. Listen, if being right around 500 isn't great, having a losing record at home is not great. For some reason at Fenway, they struggle. Like, I mean, it's weird, because they were under 500 at home all of last season. They're under 500 now. If they were in 22, they actually had a winning record, even though they were a last place team. So for them to be around 500 and be below 500 at home is really weird for me. But I would say that on the flip side of that with the Red Sox, to me, it's not about what their record is. It's how far out of the wild card they are.
Yeah, and it's funny you say wild card, because this is basically the time of year where you start talking about the wild card. Right. I know it sounds crazy.
I never stopped looking at it, even at the beginning of the season, because to me, it's not just about, I don't mean to interrupt you, about games back. It's about how many teams you need to jump.
Exactly.
And they don't have to jump a lot of teams.
And it's the teams in front of you need to jump.
Right, but if you're, say for instance, like as of Monday, they're the fourth team. So they only have to catch who's in front of them. They don't have to jump other teams.
Exactly.
So I think they're actually not in a terrible position for a team that's, I still think, is not that great. But if they're in the hunt like this, if this was the same scenario in August, I'd be pleased.
Yeah, if you look across Major League Baseball, and obviously we're going to talk about the American League here, because that's the wild card they're going to be looking at. if they play 500, they are most likely either going to be a half a game out or a game out or in that wild card spot.
Correct.
The way it goes. So
it's true in both leagues, by the way.
Yeah, but obviously this is the league we care about. Yeah. But the Red Sox doing what they're doing and keeping the course, just like the Yankees, if they stay healthy, they can do that. And I would hope they would make a something to do something if the, so if you're on the edge.
That's the key, is that I think a lot of that last year was part of it, too. If you don't do something, I think it does, even though these guys are grown men and play for money and play for themselves, I think it deflates the clubhouse if they don't do anything.
And Devers just really started getting hot. He went on that streak where he hit like six home runs in straight games, right?
Yeah.
And Cassis is out. But Duran is playing very well this year. He's playing above his ceiling, but I think that might not be above his ceiling. He might be that kind of player. So Tyler O'Neill is playing good. The Red Sox, like, there's not a ton of holes, but the problem right now, I think, with the Red Sox is these guys are all either overperforming or severely overperforming. So you got to hope they keep doing it. And then if they keep doing it, will they add that extra piece, that extra bat they need, or, you know, the extra bullpen help they need? You know, because I just don't see their starters being the ones that are going to carry you right through October, because there also is going to probably be innings limits on these guys, too.
So there's no doubt. And I'll give you my Jake Shackman Red Sox feel good.
That's what it was, Matt. It's the Jake Shackman feel good thought of the week.
Correct.
I couldn't remember what it was.
Is my father, who comes from a long line of Red Sox cynics, the game that Jared Duran stole home on that delay, you know, the first and third dynamic, and that game, I guess, my dad, every time I talk to my dad, Red Sox stink, blah, blah, blah. He's like, that was the best played baseball game I've seen in a long time, Brian. And I was like, really? He said, yes, they were excellent. And I said, okay, Dad. Okay, then that's something. So we have that to grab onto. And I know they're still a pretty poor fielding team, but if it, you know, they do stuff like take extra bases and play smart baseball, I'm here for it.
So, and they have the X factor. They'd have a very good manager, regardless of what they said happened in Houston with him, and then going back up to Boston and winning. They have a very good manager. He wouldn't be back if he wasn't good.
I just don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, again, like the fundamentals of the team, like the fielding stuff, drives me crazy. Yeah. And they've not been a good fielding team under Cora. So
that's a very hard thing to tighten up midseason, too. I mean,
no,
it's
but
just,
that's the thing about. I know it's a lot of its ability, but it's practice. I mean, I just feel like that's a different story for a different day. But the bottom line is that it's not the worst scenario in the world for the Boston Red Sox. He's John Senegal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 153 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. This college baseball story is
crazy.
It's pretty fascinating. So the school is Birmingham Southern College.
Yep.
And they're Division III. Their baseball team is actually excellent. They're the fourth winningest, according to the New York Times, the fourth winningest baseball program in NCAA Division III.
So it's one of those
for the last 14 years.
It's one of those things where
930 win seasons.
You find these Division III schools, especially, you know, for different sports, but baseball, you have these powerhouses. Like, and we have one here in Connecticut, which is Eastern Connecticut. They're really good, and then Northeast Endicott is usually really good, and Cortland's usually really good, and you see these teams that, so this is one of the ones from the South that's constantly really good, and it's crazy because guess who they're playing in the first round? They've made it to the college Division III College World Series, which only eight teams make it to.
Right, but like, we haven't given the key for people who don't know the story. The school's shutting down. The school's done. It's
shutting down on May 31st. It's shutting down. So when this tournament, the World Series, College World Series, starts on May 31st. By the end of their game, they will officially not have a school to be playing for.
So who are they playing in the first round?
They're playing Salve Regina.
A New England team.
New England team, yep. Rhode Island.
I mean, how can you not root for them? I mean, it would be such a great story, such a slap in the face.
When I first saw this story, we have a text chain that is, I feel like it's been going on for like 3 years now. This
text chain. Matt?
Yeah. It just never ends. But it's great because I feel like we never go like more than a day or 2 days without us sending something back and forth.
Talking smack, doing.
Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. But the other day I sent this to you guys and you had seen it too. And you're like, oh, we got to talk about this. And then I saw this next thing and I thought it was totally BS, but it was like They had 9 of their guys woke up with food poisoning.
What?
The morning of one of their games, and 2 of them were in the hospital, and that was when they were going for, like, their, you know, the super regionals to get in.
So the school wasn't buying new food, so they gave them spoiled food and got them sick?
I don't know. But whatever they got some serious mojo working for them, because this is, like, the ultimate Cinderella story. And at the same time, as much as, like, you think they got a long road ahead of them, which they do, because it's not easy what they're gonna got ahead of them, but there's only 8 teams left. It's not like there's...
Is it double elimination?
Elimination. 8 teams left, and I think it'll all be over by like June 6th. So 1 week, and...
The thing is, I think the NCAA funds... When you make the NCAA tournament, no matter the level, doesn't the NCAA fund
it? Yeah.
Your
all your stuff, I'm guessing.
Correct.
Yeah, your lodging and all that.
I think that's the case.
But when you get back in the town, and you're like, you know, you got to meet everyone at the commuter lot... Yeah, and you can't get back because your car is locked in. I don't know.
Well, the school basically has an endowment under $50 million, and they voted in March to shutter the school. They tried to get a loan from the state of Alabama, even for $30 million,
but then it got like stuck in the legislature or somewhere.
And it didn't.
There's money still sitting somewhere.
It didn't pass. And the school, because you and I have been through this a lot, its acceptance rate is 57%, which means. There's a lot of schools out there in Connecticut who accept 80% of their applicants.
Like 57%, surprisingly, is not that bad.
Right. I mean, it's not. My point is, it's not some joke of a school.
Right.
But if they have 1,300 students, I was surprised because they have less than 1,000 undergrads. And if your endowment is, you know, $50 million, it's not a lot. But I thought it would be enough to stay in operation. But they tried to raise money to get the endowment to $200 million to keep going. They couldn't do it, so they
sounds like they've been going straight downhill since the downturn in 2008.
Yeah, and so it's really a fascinating story, and I'm sure like if like a CBS Sunday Morning or something was smart, they would do a big story on this team.
If these guys win the Division III College World Series, I mean, Netflix is going to be like, why didn't we just get over there like when we saw the first thing?
They should do it now. I mean, Netflix could probably reopen the school with their entertainment budget.
Exactly.
So if you want to have a story to follow in baseball that's a little bit beyond baseball, you want to follow Birmingham Southern College and their Division III team. They're going against Salve Regina.
First game is Friday, May 31st at 4:45 p.m.
Where are they playing?
It's somewhere. It's in Ohio somewhere.
Oh, so it's
like the Lake
site?
Elsinore or something. Okay. It's a double A or single A team.
I was going to say, if they were in Rhode Island, or where is Salve Regina?
Rhode Island. Yeah, that'd be great.
People
Let's go.
Would go.
Oh,
yeah,
I know.
Totally.
And they're the 7 out of 8 seed. Salve is the 2 seed. So,
but with that, you don't know with Division III especially, you don't know the comps.
Cause you know nothing. You know nothing.
The competition is different. The conferences are the range of quality of ball is so wide. So, anyway.
Well, if anything, they've put the school that does not exist anymore back on the map.
And if people thought that maybe this was a rallying point to reopen it, I don't think that's the case. But I still hope the team can. They can throw a great party on a defunct campus.
They need some of that competitive balance tax money is what they need.
All right, John, great stuff. That's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. You've been listening to episode 153 of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.